This coming Shabbos, we're going to have the honor and privilege, at least in Chutz La'aretz, of reading Parshios Tazria and Metzora. And Parshios Tazria begins with the discussion about what happens when a woman gives birth. And on the eighth day, if she has a baby boy, the Torah tells us Uvayom Ashmini Yimo Besor Alotso. On the eighth day, he should have a bris milah. And the question is to be asked, just through all the years and all the awareness that a baby has a bris on the eighth day, we've never bothered to ask, why does a baby have a bris on the eighth day? Why don't you give a baby a bris at the time of his birth? After all, isn't having a baby walking around without having a perfected bris milah, isn't that a chisaron, isn't that a lack for the baby? So Rav Huttner Zatzal explained that while many think that a tzaddik needs to fall seven times, there's a famous comment, Shev yipol tzaddik v'kom, that some people would assume that that means that the tzaddik needs to fall in order, and then and only then will he be able to overcome. The real truth is that what the Chazal mean when they say Shev yipol tzaddik v'kom means is that had he not fallen and failed the first seven times, he would not overcome. Paralleling the idea, Rav Huttner explains that the same thing is true over here. One needs to experience the imperfect in order for a person to be able to perfect it. And this is the message of delaying milah for a week. The baby has been in this world to experience what it means to exist without a bris. And so then he gets the opportunity to have the bris done. So then immediately the Torah tells us Bechol Kodesh Lo Sigavi Al HaMikdash Lo Tavo Ad Melos Yemei Tahara, that the mother of a newborn shouldn't touch anything Kodesh or enter the Beis HaMikdash until her Tahara process is completed. That is to say, she is Temeya until she becomes Tahara. She can't go near Kodesh. And of course the question has to be raised, what does Kodesh have to do with Tumah? These are two different rules and two different orders. They're not opposites, or so it seems. So why do we assume that the difference between the antithesis of Kodesh is Tumah, when in truth it should usually be Chol, and the antithesis of Tumah should be Tahor, not Kadosh? So Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal, the famous Rosh Hashiva of Har Etzion, whose yahrzeit just passed us, Rav Lichtenstein explained that the concept of Tumah and Kedusha are created by man's activities. Man infuses the Kedusha into something, and man is responsible for the concept of Tumah. Not every man, because some people who are outside the realm of Kedusha can't experience Tumah. A Goy, for instance. A Goy can live his life in a gray area, because Goyim don't have the world of Kedusha. They have fewer mitzvahs to observe, and so therefore Tumah does not really affect them in their way of life. It's only those who are given the possibility of aliyah, the possibility of reaching high levels of kedusha, those are the people who have many mitzvahs, those are the people who have to adhere to a higher standard of values. But it doesn't automatically come as a gift. Being an am hanivchar, being elevated, comes with a responsibility. And in order to make sure that one doesn't diminish in any the kedusha given to him in any way, right? That's the responsibility that a human has. Don't diminish your kedusha as Yisrael. And so anything in which we infuse kedusha has to be guarded against tumah, which is a vacuum of the opportunity for kedusha. And herein lies the relationship between tumah and kedusha. And that relationship is something that carries itself throughout the book of Vayikra. And this is Rav Lichtenstein's understanding of the comparison of Tumah and Kedusha. Two things that, although are not opposites, one, the absence of one allows the other to thrive. Then we spend most of the parsha, in fact, most of the double parsha, on the issues of Tzaras. And in regard to one particular type of tzaras, the karachas and the gabachas, we're told, ish tamehu hatarua ashabo atuma, right? The Torah tells us, ish tamehu tamei tamehu berosho nego, that the man is tamei, the kohen should make him tamei, because his tuma is in his head. It's in Perikid Gimel Pasuk Mem Dalet. Rav Zilberstein Shalita quotes the Netziv here, who differentiates between tzaras of the body and the tzaras of the head. that when we deal with Tzaras of the body, Tzaras and the Negoim that represented the afflictions of Tzaras that affect the body are a result of the sins that are done by the body, or sins of desire of Taiva. At the same time, the Negoim of the head, the afflictions that afflict just the head, are a result of the sins that one does with his mind. The ones that one does with one's mind are more serious. If a person has wrong deos, wrong ideas, those need more protection when we're treating them. Rabbi Zilberstein then takes this idea of the netziv to point out that when we're dealing with what to do with somebody, it's better to have them in an environment where there are taivos than when there are dangerous philosophies. The nega of a bad philosophy is much, much worse and much more dangerous. Not that the other one isn't ideal, but if I have to choose between two bads, choosing the less dangerous is more advantageous. Either way, when we deal with the mitzora, the one who has tzaras, we're told, badad yeshev, he has to sit alone. Michutz la-machanem moshavo, his place is outside of the camp. And the Yalkut Shimoni mentions a machlokus between Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish as to whether the mitzora has to move 4 amos out of the camp or 100 amos out of the camp. So my dear friend and neighbor, Dr. Jack Cohn, explained that perhaps the difference of opinion between 4 and 100 is whether one has to move a technical halachic distance, which is 4 amos. Normally we assume you have to be in your own domain. That means that you only have to be 4 amos away. Or whether the difference is one where your speech is not able to be heard, and that's 100 amos away. So when we were discussing this, my dear friend Rabbi Pinchas Shapiro added that today, if we were to assume the second side of the machlokes, where a voice wouldn't be heard, the distance might include to a location where there's no cell reception or data plan, if we're going to really try to call a person, badad, to be able to handle solitude. So I shared the thought with him this week. Rabbi Shapiro also added, if that's what I said last time we discussed it, he says, I'm also not so sure that a person would be able to handle himself. It reminds me of a comment that was made by the late great, well, so be it. It reminds me of a different episode that I heard once from Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky, who pointed out that we are terrible at handling ourselves when we are alone. Badad Yeshev, a person should sometimes take the time to be misboded. But in the case of the Mitzora, what he really needs to do is get off his high horse and think about himself and where he's headed. The Torah tells us, Zotia Torah Samitzor Biyom Torah, so the following of the rules of the Mitzora on the day becomes Torah. And the Orach Chaim HaKadosh teaches us, the one who speaks negatively about his fellow is called about his fellow man is called a Baal Lashon Hara, even when what he's saying is true. Yet when one sins, in general, we talk about a Baal Aveira, a Baal Lashon Hara. But when a boy becomes Bar Mitzvah, we talk to him as a Bar. What's the difference between a Baal and a Bar when it comes to Averos, where you're a Baal Aveira, versus a Bar when you refer to a Bar Mitzvah? So Rabbi Yitzchak Zilberstein again notes, I believe, in the name of the family of the Chidushe Harim, who said that when we start to talk about mitzvos, we're considered b'nei mitzvah, or children of mitzvos, since we don't separate ourselves from our parents, and we certainly don't separate ourselves from Avinu Shebashamayim. This is what makes us b'nei, or bar. However, when a person chooses to go off the derech, and chooses the path of sin, then he's gone apart, and he owns his own path. Such a person is referred to as a Baal Aveira. He's the one who has blazed his own path, and we want to hold him back from it. In the process of becoming Tahor, the Kohen is, V'tziva Kohen v'lakach lami Taher, Shnei Tziporim Chayos Tahoros. He should take 2 birds that are Tahor. And the Zohar Kaddish points out that 1 bird is the bird for Lashon Hara, and the other is the bird for Lashon HaTov. So why would one need to bring a bird for speaking Lashon HaTov or not speaking Lashon HaTov? Why is that part of the issue? So the great Rabbi Bernard Weinberger, the author of the Shemen HaTov Shalita, explains that the lack of encouragement is an Aveira. A similar idea is expressed by the Chasam Sofer, who explained that the reason Moshe Rabbeinu was told, the reason why you're supposed to speak to them, even though they already have the Chachma to do the work of the Mikdash, was that you're supposed to encourage them, to let them know that you believe in their abilities and they should believe in themselves as well. This is a responsibility as much as it is for us to stay away from Lashon Hara. Towards the end of the parsha, we talk about some of the other tumos, including the tumas zav, whom, after counting 7 days, the zav is told that he's supposed to go into mayim chayim. And the Chumash makes a distinction between a mikvah, which we call ashboren, it stands still, the water stands still, versus a mayan, or mayim chayim, which needs to flow. A zav needs to be toivel in a mayan. And similarly, the efer paraduma needs to be in a mayan, even though the Tamei Mace himself goes to the mikvah, and the Mitzorah's bird needs to be dipped by Mayim Chaim. So Rashi quotes in the Gaonim that like a Zav needs Mayim Chaim, so too a Zav needs Mayim Chaim. But in other places, Rashi himself says this isn't so. So Mari Virabi, Rav Shachter Shalita, pointed out that this is the more accepted position, that a Zava does not need Mayim Chaim, and that's why when a woman goes to the mikvah, we don't need to make sure that all our mikvos are indeed Ma'ayanos. So the Bach suggested, right, that the Mayan is necessary only to be Matir, a woman, from her Tumah. But to be able to allow her to return to her husband, perhaps a mikvah is enough. Reshachta said he hears the Bach's opinion, but he has to understand that that explanation is quite weak. In truth, it's just that we don't follow the Gaonim because we have overt Mishnayos and Megillah that specifically state that that is a difference between a Zav and a Zav Gedola. The Zav needs to be in a Mayan, he needs Mayim Chaim, and the Zava does not. Finally, in the Haftarah, we're also going to talk about Mitzorayim, the four Mitzorayim, and the commentaries identify the four Mitzorayim as Gehazi, Elisha's student and assistant, and the three sons that he had who were smitten with Tzaras because Gehazi rebelled against the word of Elisha. And why was Gehazi doomed to a life without the possibility to do tshuva? So the Gemara in Sota on Daf Membeis actually castigates this idea, it's Membeis Amud Aleph rather, adding that one should not be like Gehazi and Elisha, but rather a person has to be very careful to be smo doche fiamino mikarevis. He has to make sure that his left hand, while his left hand pushes away, his right needs to bow closer. And of course, one needs to ask the question, sometimes it's good to push away, so why doesn't one automatically adopt the approach of Elisha? So the great Rav Aaron Kahn Shlita explained that we need to be exceptionally careful of how we rebuke. When we deal with the Rosh at the Seder, we don't even address him. Ilu hayasham lo ayanigal, right? Leave a lo, we all of a sudden cease speaking to him since he's not really ready to hear. But to turn our backs on him and not to teach him the road to tshuva, says Rav Kahn, is a very, very dangerous practice. We need to be careful of rejection. Elisha rejected Gehazi, and according to some, the Gehazi later is responsible for putting the Shema Meforash into the Avodah Zarah of Yeravam. We need to make sure that we don't send our own people away. They say that the Chafetz Chaim once turned his back on a Rebbe because the Rebbe kicked out Leon Trotsky from Cheder. Trotsky continued to run until he became one of the greatest and strongest anti-religious individuals in the world of communism. We need to go ahead and learn from that. We need to make sure that when we're dochef, we have to be dochef in such a careful way and always be ready to turn around and teach the derech tshuva labasa shoveva. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should do the same for us and bring us back to Yerushalayim Berina, right? And to give us the opportunity to experience not only Moadim L'Simcha, but L'Gula Shlema.